Mirror Lab. Trudy slid Professor Ulrich's door shut quietly. A few paces down the corridor, McClintock was already speaking into his pocket phone.
"Yes, Dr. Cardenas, I appreciate your cooperation. I'll call you back as soon as I get to my quarters here at Farside and we can discuss this problem in detail."
He clicked the phone shut and turned to Trudy.
"I've got to run. See you later."
And he actually started to sprint down the corridor, only to bounce and soar in the light lunar gravity. He thumped against the wall, skidded to a halt, and then, throwing an embarrassed grin in Trudy's direction, he started along the corridor again, slower this time, more carefully. Trudy was left alone. She hadn't the faintest idea of which way to turn. No one else was in sight. Everybody's busy working, she thought. "Well, this rabbit's warren can't be all that big. I'll find my way. First thing is to figure out where my quarters are."
Then she saw the same cute blonde guy who had met her at the landing site hustling down the corridor toward her in his pumpkin-colored coveralls.
"Professor Ulrich says I'm supposed to show you around the place," he said, puffing slightly.
"Great," said Trudy. "Maybe you could show me my quarters first?"
"Sure."
As Trudy suspected, the underground facility wasn't very large. One main corridor, with three side corridors branching from it. Trudy's living quarters consisted of a single room, sparsely furnished with a bed, a desk, two chairs, one a recliner that looked like it had been salvaged from a clipper rocket, and a wide display screen mounted on the wall above the desk. A compact kitchenette took up one corner. Accordion-fold doors opened onto a closet and a lavatory. She saw that her soft-sided garment carrier and travel bag had been deposited on the bed, which looked big enough for two people.
"All the living spaces are small," her guide explained almost apologetically.
"This'll do fine," Trudy said. "It'll be like living in a dorm again." The kid chuckled and nodded.
"Not as many parties, though. The prof doesn't like fooling around."
"Nose to the grindstone, huh?"
"And then some," he said fervently.
"Okay, where to now?" Trudy asked.
"The only really interesting thing to show you is the mirror lab. The rest is just offices and workrooms and living spaces."
"So let's see the mirror lab." As they went to the door, Trudy pointed to the name tag on the guide's coveralls.
"Winston, huh? What's your first name?"
He reddened slightly.
"Winston? I'm Winston Squared."
Then he added, "My father's sense of humor."
"Do people call you Winnie?"
Shaking his head, Winston replied,
"Not unless they want to fight."
She smiled at him.
"Okay, Winston. My name's Trudy, and it isn't short for Gertrude, just plain Trudy."
"Okay, Trudy it is."
Winston told Trudy that he was an electronics engineer. His nominal job was wiring the hundreds of antennas of the Cyclops facility as they were erected.
"When I'm not running errands for Professor Ulrich," he said.
Then he quickly amended,
"Not that I mind showing you around. This is fun."
The mirror lab was the largest space in the underground complex. A natural cave in the Ringwall Mountain that had been smoothed and filled with the equipment for making 100-meter-wide telescope mirrors. No frills, Trudy saw. This was a working area. A half-dozen technicians hunched over workstations on a balcony that overlooked a huge, slowly spinning turntable.
"That's the oven where the glass chunks are melted down," Winston explained. "Then the molten glass is spun slowly so it flows over the superstructure and takes on the exact curvature of the mirror. Once that's done, the mirror is allowed to cool. Then the final polishing is done."
Trudy stared down from the balcony's railing at the slowly revolving turntable. It looked well used, strictly functional, utterly utilitarian. 100 meters in diameter, she breathed. "Wow."
"You couldn't build a mirror that big on Earth," Winston said. "It'd crack under its own weight."
"Where's the glass come from?"
"From Selene. They scoop silicon from the ground. The regolith has plenty of silicon in it. And oxygen and all the other elements you need to make high-quality optical glass."
"Strictly a local operation," Trudy murmured, still staring down at the turntable as it moved at its stately, unhurried pace.
"Oh, we have to bring in boron and some of the other exotic elements up from Earth," Winston said. "But those are minor ingredients. The bulk of the material comes from the regolith."
One of the technicians got up from her workstation and walked past Trudy and Winston, heading for the dispensing machines at the far end of the balcony.
"Hi, Wynn," she said as she passed.
He nodded to her.
"Lunch break?"
"Kinda."
"You heard they're bringing the Mendeleev mirror back?" Winston asked her. She stopped and turned toward him.
"That's gonna screw up our schedule for sure. Gotta start all over again from scratch."
Winston shrugged, and the technician headed for the dispensing machines.
Trudy felt her brow knitting as she asked, "When you set up the mirror in its mount, what about the temperature swings between daylight and dark? How's that affect the glass?"
"Doesn't," said Winston. "The mirror is kept inside an insulated tube. Never gets direct sunlight. It's always at a low temperature, so it won't expand or contract very much."
She nodded. "Figures."
There really wasn't much to see, but the mirror lab fascinated Trudy. The biggest telescope mirrors ever made were being manufactured here. The place was quietly spectacular, she thought. The 1,000-meter telescopes that the IAA wanted to place in space were composed of smaller segments. None of their sections were as big as the mirrors being built here at Farside. After nearly an hour of staring at the turntable and talking to the monitoring technicians, Winston led Trudy back out to the central corridor. She left with reluctance, but Winston seemed to have something more to show her.
"Where are we going now?" she asked.
He pointed down the corridor to a closed steel hatch. Above it was a lighted red sign, "Airlock."
"Outside," said Winston.
"Outside?"
A shiver of alarm flared through Trudy.
"If you're up to it."
Outside. Winston slid back the corridor door and led Trudy into a locker room, where empty spacesuits were hanging in a row like a museum display of medieval armor. A hard plastic bench ran along the front of the lockers. Beyond its end, Trudy could see the heavy steel inner hatch of the airlock.
"This is an initiation ritual,"
Trudy told herself as she slowly wormed her arms through the ribbed sleeves of the thermal undergarment for the spacesuit that Winston had picked out for her.
"Like hazing at a sorority, or buying a round of beers first day on a new job," she thought.
"Here they take you out on the bare, airless surface of the moon to see if you've got the guts to do it. That's how you become one of them."
"You need a small size," Winston said, leading her past several lockers, each containing an empty suit.
"You can do this," Trudy told herself, trying to keep her fear from showing. "You went outside at Cellini and it was okay." Yeah, a sneering voice in her head countered. "Outside, in a tour bus. A nice, comfortable, safe bus with 20-some tourists. And even then you didn't have the nerve to get out of the bus and walk on the surface. You just looked through the glass ceiling and focused on the earth shining up there nice and bright.
It was dangerous outside, she knew. You could go through 400-degree temperature swings just by stepping from sunlight into shadow. Hard radiation poured out of the sky, and meteors peppered the surface. I could get shot out there."
"Here," said Winston, stopping at one of the lockers. "This one ought to fit you okay." Reluctant or not, she wriggled into the pants of the spacesuit and allowed Winston to help her slide the hard-shelled torso over her head. Several other Farside employees had mysteriously shown up, grins on their faces, witnesses to the newbie's initiation. As Winston settled the life support pack on her back and plugged in its connections to the suit, he asked mildly,
"Trudy, are you sure you want to do this?"
"Sure,"
she snapped, with a certainty that she didn't feel at all.
"Why not?"
"Okay."
He pulled down a suit with his own name stenciled on its chest, while a couple of the technicians who were standing nearby stepped up to check out Trudy's spacesuit. Boots and gloves sealed, backpack connected. One of them started to take the clear glass steel helmet off the shelf atop the locker, but Trudy pulled it out of his hands and lowered it over her own head.
"I can do that much for myself," she thought.
One of the bystanders, a sturdily built older woman, watched intently as Trudy turned the helmet on its neck ring until it clicked into place.
"Locked and loaded," she murmured with an approving nod.
The woman seemed to be in charge. She carefully checked the suit's radio reception, the servo motors that helped to bend the joints, the air circulation fans and heater. Trudy heard the faint gurgle of water circulating through the undergarment. "Good to go," the female technician said.